A lifetime of hard work. Children laughing in the kitchen. Family photos on a restaurant wall. A legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation. Like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
This is the Ben Burnett Show, the only show in America that features a one-term has-been retired politician that nobody knows on Extra 106.3.
Welcome into the Ben Burnett Show on Extra 106.3. You can always find me on Twitter at Ben Burnett. I mean, lately I haven't been doing a lot of current events. I've been talking about March Madness and basketball. I went to Stanford University, very proud alum. And you can also follow me on Instagram at the Ben Burnett Show. Last week, I had Stephen Dillard, who is the chief judge for the Georgia Circuit Court of Appeals. I sat in public service for 4 years. I have absolutely no earthly idea how you get a case to Stephen Dillard's desk, but he talks about all the things that make Georgia interesting and the country. He had a chance to go sit on the federal bench with the Sixth Circuit in Atlanta, elected to stay with the state of Georgia, but it's neat to see how people get put in for those kinds of jobs, how you practice, how you get there. I think the story to pretty much everybody is unbelievably interesting. We've seen a lot of things take shape over the last couple of weeks. President Vladimir Putin, I always say President Vladimir Putin with the air quotes, won re-election with a staggering 87.3% of the vote with 77.5% turnout. When his term is expired in 2030, he will be 77 years old. He is Russia's longest serving leader since Joseph Stalin. It's hard to believe that Stalin was actually part of the Allied powers, even though the Americans and the British and the French were really super afraid of him. Russia was a country that had a lot of, I don't even know how to say this, had a lot of synergies with the United States just based on who our enemies were. And Russia has gone in a separate direction after the fall of the Berlin Wall. You know, there's a lot of nationalistic pride over there. I honestly see, I'm not one of the guys who sits there and tells you that I think Donald Trump is a Nazi. I think Donald Trump is a populist. Joseph Stalin and Vladimir Putin were not populists or are not populists. They literally govern on behalf of power. And I think sometimes the messaging that you find is interesting. You saw President Trump talk about in his first term an unequivocal right to life. It was a states' rights issue. And then the rights, Roe versus Wade, ultimately gets overturned. The Supreme Court gives all those rights back to the states. And now Donald Trump wants to be some sort of magical consensus builder. He's looking at a 15 or 16 week abortion ban. I don't think it's ever going to pass. Hear me when I say this. I wish it did. I wish it did because I don't believe that a life in Georgia starts at a different point than a life in California. And I think that the collective wisdom, if you ask me my honest opinion as a 41-year-old white male, which I know a lot of you women are going to laugh at, to me when there's brain activity and you can feel pain in the womb, it's a life. I know a lot of you are heartbeat people. I'm not mad at you. I understand it. Candidly, I kind of agree with you. But when you unequivocally know that something is a life, it has the ability to feel pain. I don't think a six-week-old fetus has any idea whether or not it is existing. And so I actually think that Donald Trump, even though I think he governs like a populist, seeking that 15-week abortion ban nationwide is the right thing to do. And I think that for one reason. I think it forces the left to be in the solutions business. And I think it forces the right to be in the solutions business. The day and age where people are willing to fight hell and high water over social issues in this country, it's over. When you look at the immigration crisis that is happening on the southern border with Arizona, California, New Mexico, and especially Texas, those are people. And I wish that the United States federal government would get its head out of its ass and have an honest, brokered conversation with the people who live in this country. Because the truth is that we all, I bet 95% of us, believe that we have to have a comprehensive immigration platform, plan for this country. Plenty of other countries that are significantly to the left of the United States of America have that, and we refuse to. And I think that at some point in the next 4 years, I think I'm excited about a President Trump presidency for the second time for one reason. because there are going to be a lot of Republicans who are just objectively sick of him. And every single Democrat will be too. And I think ultimately those two powers combine to force that man to the table to put his money where his mouth is. If you want to be in the solutions business for this country, then you have to actually be in the solutions business for this country. We talked last week, February of 2024 was the first month in the history of America ever, ever, that what we took in as a federal government exceeded what we spent in interest payments by a factor of 2 to 1. That's not if, that's when. The vast majority of American debt that is bought in our treasury bills, in our municipal bonds, in our bonding stuff, the infrastructure obligations that we have, that's how we pay for them. They're bought to an incredible extent by sovereign governments, one, and foreign banking interests, two. And I think that China and Russia and the countries like that are going to collectively get the United States closer to a place where their debt exceeds income by a factor of 3 to 1, and they're going to shut it off. Guys, when you hear me talk like this, I'm not trying to scare you. It's going to be drastically different in this country the day that that takes place. And that's going to be for the worse. And there's nobody I would rather have in office for that day than President Donald Trump, because he will force Congress. Trump, for a lot of things, is a businessman. And he knows that the cost of capital, as you call it in the private sector, is one of the most important parts of American democracy. He also knows that when the spigot gets shut off, commerce stops. And I trust Donald Trump more than I trust anybody else on the ballot with solving that issue. Do I think the man has ultimately been the right solution for American politics in 2022, 2023, 2024? No. And I'm resigned to the fact that we're either going to pick him or we're going to pick Biden. And my biggest problem with Joe Biden, by a mile, is that the guy continues to spend money on things that are totally unnecessary. And you look at the divisiveness. I even think people on the left have come around on DEI to a certain extent. Diversity, equity, and inclusion, you guys all hear about it. You're starting to see states throw it out in their politics. Alabama did earlier this week. And I think for all the crazy things that Alabama does, I almost cussed on the radio. For all the crazy things that Alabama does, they're right to do that. And Georgia will be right to do that. This country, as its balance sheet gets further out of order, we're going to need the meritocracy of the American economy front and center. It's not going to matter if you hire somebody based on the fact that they're purple, or they're gay, or that they are sensitive to climate change or anything like that. American sovereignty is going to continue to excel based on meritocracy. That's the kind of Republican that I am. I think the best person should win, because I talked about it when we let off, the meritocracy in college basketball, it is determined over the course of the next 3 weeks. And there's only one team that gets to win. In the same way, there is only one country who ultimately gets to sit on top of the mountain. And if it's going to be the United States, the Democrats do not have the right answers for that conversation, because they don't, and they haven't, and they have shown you for the last 3 years what their agenda ultimately is. And don't get me wrong, like, the Democrats don't necessarily like each other either. You've got plenty of people in the business of solving problems like Henry Cuellar, the congressman from Texas, Democrat, conservative one, a business-friendly one, signed on to a U.S. House resolution last week that said, President Biden's handling of the border is totally and completely feckless. It's useless. And do you know how much courage it takes to do that? Yeah, the Republicans have a 2 or a 3 or a 4 or a 5 seat majority in the United States House of Representatives. Cuellar means business, because he's not going to get anything done with this Congress. And he is going to be put on the firing squad line if President Biden is back in office. Only Henry Cuellar is 100% right. We talk all the time. Not everything the Republicans ever want to do is the right thing for the future of this country. It's not. You've seen in the last couple of weeks, I told you last week that I think the United States Congress is ultimately correct to ban TikTok, if only to figure out how we are going to treat social media entities. I had somebody call me after the segment last week and say that I totally agree with your position on the issue, because my girlfriend got all of her information on the Israel-Palestine conflict based on TikTok. And she was wondering why the Israelis were so evil. Guys, this is a woman who is a business owner. She's conservative. We've got to get back to being a country and a party who does our own research that's grounded in history. And that's one of the things that I thought was really interesting, bringing it all back to Vladimir Putin as we started. He made a lot of suggestive comments to the United States during his re-election or re-inauguration speech. And candidly, I kind of felt myself wondering, you know, in every truth, there's a lie. In every lie, there's a truth. You've heard that saying. And Vladimir Putin said that he was disgusted with the fact that the United States could have an election where they used the Justice Department to target one side's political rivals. Now, I realize that statement coming from him is really rich. If you have ever stepped to that man in the arena, I mean, you've seen Yevgeny Prigozhin, the Wagner militia group, who, I mean, was a bad dude by any stretch of the imagination, gets blown out of the sky. Less than a year later, Alexei Navalny, the last real formidable challenger he had, was finally killed in a prison. He was laid to rest last week in Moscow. So we can't take Vladimir Putin very seriously, but I actually think it's interesting. And the other thing that I would tell you, Russian politics is fascinating, and the Cold War is fascinating. And I think that we're entering another phase of the Cold War. And honestly, there's a show on Netflix. I don't plug a lot of stuff, but it's called The Bomb in the Cold War. It's about how the United States federal government and the Department of Defense used two atomic bombs on Japan to end the war, because Japan was just going to fight to the death until there was no one left, and that was how the United States saw its way out. But it showed the Russians that the technology existed and the atom splitting that could take place, and it really launched the Cold War. It's an 8-part series. It is so good. If you get a chance to go watch it, please do. Another freebie from the Ben Burnett Show. I've got trucker hats from my partners at Peach State Pride. Peach State Pride's a Georgia-based clothing brand. You see the peach, you see the bumper stickers all over the place. If you will send me a DM on Twitter at Ben Burnett, on Facebook at Ben Burnett with a blue check mark, or on Instagram at the Ben Burnett Show, any of the three, somebody will read it. Give me your address. We will put you in line. We will send you one. They're totally free. I just put the brand out there, and guys, these are super nice. The whole shipment comes in about 5 weeks. Excited to bring that to you. It's just a little value for the weekend listeners. This is Extra 106.3, Atlanta's only conservative talk station. We will be right back.
In today's fast-paced world, your business deserves banking solutions that are as dynamic and cost-effective as you are. Solutions like free business checking from LGE Community Credit Union, free online and mobile banking, no minimum balance required, plus no maintenance fees and dividends on your balance. At LGE, we're a smarter way to bank. See what's possible for your business at lgeccu.org. No monthly maintenance fees. Other service fees such as NSF, overdraft, wire, and stop payment fees still apply. Not all businesses will qualify. Membership eligibility and base savings account that keeps a $5 minimum balance required.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
This is the Ben Burnett Show on Extra 106.3.
Welcome into the Ben Burnett Show. My guest today is Stephen Dillard, an appellate court judge on the Georgia Court of Appeals. Did I get that right?
That's correct, yes.
Well, first thing I'm going to ask you is, what in the world does that mean?
Well, I mean, that's a fair question. It's a really important job, but it's, you know, I'm a statewide constitutional officer, and but I'm in one of those famous down ballot races that a lot of people don't know as much about. So one of the things I try to do is I'm a statewide constitutional officer. I'm just as much of a judge in Bainbridge as I am in Blue Ridge or Macon or Atlanta or Columbus, you name it. I am on a statewide ballot. We are nonpartisan, and we run in the primary. That's when our general election is. So if the general in November, that's the one everyone normally thinks about. Ours is the general in the primary in May.
Okay, so I've sat as an elected official, and very rarely do I not know what people do who hold elected office. And I was like, you could tell me you're a judge.
Right.
And I would be like, okay, well, he hears cases right that are probably legal in nature.
That's right.
Almost always.
Yeah, that's right. And so, you know, most of the time when you talk about the courts, we're thinking of the federal courts, right?
And, of course.
In particular, the Supreme Court of the United States. So what a lot of people don't realize is that for the vast majority of Americans, they're never going to darken the door of federal courts. And over roughly 98% of all judicial cases come from the state courts. So What I do in the state system in Georgia, we have state trial courts, and I'm going to simplify it, but we have state trial courts. Then we have my court, which is where 85% of all those cases that come up from the state courts, we are the court of effectively last resort in 85% of all cases in Georgia. And then you have the Supreme Court of Georgia, and they are the court of last resort, the real court of last resort, and the final word on Georgia law. That's a very quick summary.
Well, Judge Dillard, I introduced you informally and kind of formally. I always call everybody. It doesn't matter if I've had Mike Pence on the show.
Yeah.
And he was Mr. Vice President, and then he was like, well, talk to me. How about how you feel about this, Mike?
Yeah. And you can call me Steve. We're not in a courtroom.
And that's Your Honor, Your Holiness.
You've been called
a lot worse.
I absolutely have.
What got you interested? Clearly a lawyer. There are very few courts where you can be a judge and not also be a lawyer.
Right.
What got you interested? How did you grow up? Talk me through your education, your background, and what prompted you to think that this was a good idea for your life?
You know, I don't come from a family of lawyers. I'm always reticent to say that I'm like a first-gen lawyer, because normally when you say first-gen, there's certain connotations to that. And I came from a very educated family. My father had a PhD in philosophy. My maternal grandfather had a PhD in philosophy. They both went to Peabody, which is part of Vanderbilt.
You're thinkers.
They certainly were. My mother was had a master's of social work. My uncle was an MD. So I had basically, most of my family had advanced graduate degrees, but we had no lawyers. From a very young age, my parents divorced when I was 3, so I would go spend the summers with my dad, who taught at the University of Alabama. He taught students how to work with special needs children. He had cable, interestingly enough, in Tuscaloosa before we had it in Nashville, Tennessee, where I grew up. And there was a show, there was a movie a while back in the 70s called The Paper Chase, which you may have heard of. There was a spinoff of that called The Paper Chase. It was a TV series on Showtime. I fell in love with that show. I went back and rewatched it recently. I was like, how was I watching? This is wildly inappropriate for someone. There's just some things, some storylines.
Not a ton of supervision going on sometimes.
Apparently not. But I was focused on the law aspect of it. And really, that's really what sparked my interest in the law. For years after that, kind of leading up to college, I went back and forth between that and broadcasting. I thought about sports broadcasting. Judge Robert Bork, shortly after his failed nomination to the Supreme Court of the United States, he came to Samford University. I listened to him speak. That, once again, kind of reignited, sparked my interest in the law again. And that really, the rest of it went from there. I ended up taking a gap year between college and law school, but I knew I wanted to go to law school, and so ended up going to the Mississippi College School of Law after Samford.
It's another Baptist university.
Another Baptist university.
You're very Baptist.
I'm now Catholic, so we could do a whole show on that. very proud of the education that I received from Samford University and Mississippi College School of Law. Really just both top-notch institutions, and really I was well-prepared when I got out of both of those institutions to practice law. Came back to Georgia. I'd moved to Georgia briefly before law school because of my now wife, then fiance, Krista McDaniel Dillard. Her father is a local pastor, been a local pastor here in Macon for years. And so I lived here briefly, went to law school, came back to Georgia, and joined a firm, Stone & Baxter, and was with them for about 5 years, and then did something a little unusual. I went and clerked for a federal appellate judge after 5 years of practice. That's become much more typical now, but I knew that was what I wanted to do. I really wanted to focus on appeals. And so I did a 2-year clerkship for Judge Mannion, who was appointed by Ronald Reagan in 1986, stepped down from the bench in 2022. Transformative experience. He's an incredible person, a wonderful judge, and came back to Macon, practiced for another 7 years with a firm called James Bates, Pope and Spivey. And then in 2010, Governor Perdue appointed me to my dream job at the Court of Appeals, and I've been there ever since.
So when Governor Perdue puts you in, how do you get, put you in the appellate court seat? Is it an unexpired term?
Correct. And the way it works is if you are within 6 months of a general election, you then go to the next general election. So because I was sworn in November of 2010, actually the I was appointed the day before Election Day. So I basically got 2 years and 2 months of a term, but I had to run in 2012 for a 6-year term. So I've now run, I'm actually running now for my third 6-year term. I've been elected twice.
Have you drawn an opponent yet?
Knock on wood. I'm going to knock right here. I have not yet. And, you know, you like to think that's because the people think I'm doing a good job and the bar and the lawyers. I certainly try to work hard and to have a reputation for fairness and for interpreting the law and not imposing my own values through my opinions, but just simply following the law wherever it takes me.
So like 1 to 10, let's assume that you have read the Georgia State Constitution cover to cover 2 times. I mean, you feel like you know it pretty well.
You know, the Georgia Constitution, if you actually compare it to the federal, I've read the federal Constitution a lot. I have read numerous provisions of the Georgia Constitution. It is massive. I don't know if you've actually seen.
Isn't it like 10 times the size?
It is massive. And so I read the Georgia Constitution when I'm dealing with certain provisions of that Constitution. Now, I will tell you, being the nerd I am, I have gone all the way through it, thumbing through the different sections to learn, because I think you learn a lot by seeing how Georgia structures its constitution. And I love that you're mentioning it, because a lot of Georgians don't realize that we have our own constitution that sometimes can offer greater rights. We can't provide less rights than the rights protected by the federal constitution, but we can provide greater protection for certain rights.
And so some states take that 10th Amendment pretty seriously.
Well, I mean, you know, I think, you know, we were set up in kind of a dual sovereignty system, right? There are certain things that the federal government is in charge of, and there's other things that the states are in charge of. And certainly Georgia takes the aspects where it is sovereign seriously.
Now, as a guy who's read it cover to cover, do you ever read anything and think this was clearly written 300 years ago?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there
and you're, are, and you're like, somebody should probably fix this.
Yeah. And, well, you know, that's the beauty of our system, is that we frequently have constitutional amendments that go to the people for a vote. And there's a certain kind of beauty to that, a Jeffersonian purity to how we decide to do things in Georgia, including judicial elections. You know, we could have a whole hour debate about the pros and cons of judicial elections as opposed to the federal appointment process. I would argue that in many respects, the federal appointment process is far more political than the way, and we can talk about the Georgia judicial selection process, but I think if you're going to have elections, Georgia does it the right way. And unlike the Supreme Court of the United States, our justices on the Supreme Court of Georgia and the judges on the Court of Appeals are directly accountable to the people they serve, which I don't think is a bad thing.
Well, it's funny you talk about this, and I've never had anybody request anything, but as I pick up listeners, people know that, like, if you call me or you email me or you send me a DM, like, I'll write you back.
Right.
And I had somebody in Tennessee who, Tennessee is governed by 2 Republicans in the United States Senate, and we currently have a Democrat elected in office. And he said, there is a seat, I believe it's the 6th Circuit, it's Tennessee, Kentucky.
And Ohio.
And Ohio.
Yeah.
And he said, it is a dream of mine. And I had no idea about this guy's political leanings.
Right.
And I said, how, you know, are you a registered Democrat? He goes, it's a dream of mine to sit in one of these federally appointed things. And pretty conservative as a human being. But I'll help anybody get where they want to go.
Right.
And he said, Georgia is my only chance. I don't know anybody in Tennessee who can help me have a conversation. Can you reach out to Senator Warnock's office, right, if you know them, right, or Senator Ossoff, and say, hey, can you put me in? And I was like, I have never had that request.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't know where it will go, but you've always been kind to me.
Sure.
However that falls.
Yeah,
is how it'll fall. And so I literally reached out to both of their offices, and they both said, we only put people up from the state of Georgia. And I said, I asked and told you I would.
Yeah.
My word is my bond. Here's the no.
Yeah, there's a lot of, regardless of kind of Republican or Democrat, there's a lot of deference toward the home state senators. And even within a circuit, and that's a different system, you know, you have the federal district courts, which are the trial courts in the federal system. And then you have what you touched on, federal circuit courts. I actually clerked for one. I clerked for the 7th Circuit with Judge Mannion. That covered Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin. And the court was actually headquartered in Chicago, but I lived in South Bend.
Was that incredible?
It was. Listen, it was amazing. Judge Posner was in his prime at that point. Judge Easterbrook, some of the most famous judges that have never served on the Supreme Court. Obviously, I think the world of my judge, Judge Mannion. But it was, you got to see David Boies, Ken Starr. I mean, there were incredible lawyers coming through there and arguing. So to do that for 2 years, it's usually a 1 year, but I ended up doing two. Judge Mannion asked me to stay for an extra year. It was like getting an advanced law degree in appellate advocacy. That's one of the best preparations for being an appellate judge, is to actually clerk for an appellate judge. And that's why you see a lot of current judges, you know, who are appellate judges who have clerked. And so I'm a big fan of that.
So I have to ask you, you know, most politicians, that if they're motivated, they'll sit on like a county commission and then they'll want to run for a state senate seat or anything like that. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's most of the people who get to that level. They don't just self-fund their first big race or their first big job. If you got asked to look at one of those jobs that are appointed by the people in the ivory tower in Washington, D.C., does it pull on you at all?
I actually was asked during the Trump administration. I got calls from the White House counsel's office about the possibility of putting in for certain federal judgeships. And not that life tenure is certainly a tempting thing. But where I was at that moment in my life, I was in leadership at the Court of Appeals of Georgia. I think at that time I was actually I think I was the chief judge at the time of that. And I just said, you know, I think I'm where I need to be.
Sure.
And at a certain point, ambition has to give way to practical considerations. I've had opportunities to put in for the Supreme Court of Georgia. I've been nominated several times. It's never been the right time. I don't rule it out. But I'll be honest with you, I think I have the best appellate job in Georgia, federal or state. The Court of Appeals is an amazing court. It's statewide. We handle criminal and civil. So unlike Alabama, we don't have a separate state intermediate court for civil and criminal cases. We're also unified in geography. We're statewide. We're not like Florida. We're not divided up into districts. So it's really a robust, strong appellate court. And as I said, we're in 85% of cases, we are the last word on that case. And we get to do fascinating cases, really high profile, fascinating cases. You read about them in the news. You don't always see the Court of Appeals, but we're handling, you know, Atlanta's an international city. Georgia's a massive state. And so I love being in the state system. I like working for my home state and serving the people that I live with.
I hear it time and time again from public servants that I greatly respect. It's like you choose one way or the other. And there are plenty of guys who have come and gone. And Kathy Cox, who's the president of Georgia College, is probably one who clearly has the acumen and the thought process to hold a huge office that makes giant decisions on behalf of this country.
She did, Secretary of State of Georgia.
And I mean, even
beyond that,
where you read your name in the Wall Street Journal a lot. And there are people on the right, and they just say, look, I always felt like I was a state guy or a state gal, and that was really what I wanted to do. If I went to the federal side, I'd have felt like I really wasn't making a huge difference. I don't want to fight all the time.
Right. Well, and that's, you know, leaving aside the state and federal kind of difference right now, I mean, for me, the question I've always asked, and, you know, it sounds a little corny, but it's true, I always ask myself, where do I think I can do the most good?
Totally.
And so for me, especially because we had so much turnover on our court, we had a lot of people during the 4 years that President Trump was in office who moved from the state to the federal courts. And listen, I don't begrudge anybody that wants to do that.
I think good people do it.
Absolutely. But I think for my unique circumstances and the fact that I was rising up in seniority and that I'd kind of been on the Court of Appeals under the old system and kind of with the old guard, and now I was with the new, I had a foot in both of those. We were, Justice Blackwell, who ended up going to the Supreme Court of Georgia, he and I were the first two judges appointed by a Republican governor in the history of the state of Georgia to the Court of Appeals. I mean, people forget that. The Governor Perdue was the first.
It's not that long ago.
Right, and it's not so much about
it's not so much about like Republican and Democrat, but Governor Perdue did have a very particular type of person that he was looking to appoint with a very kind of a judicial philosophy that those courts had not seen. And so because of the turnover and because I rose up seniority pretty quickly, I felt like my viewpoint on that court was important. It was certainly unique when I got appointed, and I think it's still unique now. And that's a good thing to have different people with different viewpoints. There are a lot of, well, I shouldn't say there's a lot, there's several people at the Supreme Court of Georgia that hold very similar views to me in terms of judicial philosophy. At the Court of Appeals, I think that's less so. And so I feel like on the Court of Appeals, I can offer a unique voice and a unique perspective that maybe will have a greater effect there than at the Supreme Court of Georgia, at least for now.
So if you're on my podcast and my radio show, and I happen to come in front of you, like, is this now, am I now, are you conflicted out? Like, because we're big Samford fans and I've given you earned media.
You know, I don't think
what's
so.
What's the threshold, Judge?
I think of this as like educating the public about what we do because there's so little coverage. I mean, a lot of people aren't.
None. It's not.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I'm on social media so much, because I'm trying to educate the public about this very important court that makes life altering decisions in the daily lives of Georgians. And I think they have a right to know. I think judges that serve them, and really, you know, I have a saying that I like to say, and I hope you'll appreciate it. I always say judges are different, but we're not special. And what I mean by that is judges are different from the perspective of we shouldn't be partisan. We shouldn't be. I'm not a Republican judge. I'm not a Democratic judge. I'm just a judge. But I'm not special in the sense that I am just like a legislator or a governor or somebody in the executive branch. I serve the people. And so it's important for me. I don't think I should just sit up in my ivory tower at the Nathan Deal Judicial Center, which, by the way, is beautiful. You ought to come for a tour. But I think it's important for me to get out there and to speak to the public about what we do so that they can understand the inner workings and culture of our court and how important and crucial it is to the lives of daily lives of Georgians. And so that's what I try to do.
In addition to being a judge, you are also an adjunct faculty member and part-time Mercer Bear,
yeah,
educating, we'll call them the have-nots in the Southern Conference as far as private schools go. I'm kidding. I'm kidding to the three people from Mercer who will hear.
You're going to get me in trouble.
This place is beautiful.
It really is. It's a gorgeous law school and a great university. Bill Underwood, President Bill Underwood, has done a phenomenal job leading Mercer. And
I only poke at them because I'm a Samford guy.
Well, I am too. You know, we share that in common.
You just can't poke at them because you're on the payroll.
Listen, I'm here at Mercer wearing my, they know that they have to put up with that. Like when Samford and Mercer play, they know I'm all in for Samford. I mean, I root for Mercer in any other context, but I'm all in for the Dogs.
Talk about your role here at Mercer.
Yeah.
What do you teach? What do you not teach? How is the responsibility, and I would argue you have a really important job, and I hope I never come in front of you because it means it will have been very expensive to get there.
That's right.
But talk about the responsibility and what you enjoy about talking to people in their early to mid-20s and trying to, you need good people that want to do this profession because I don't.
Well, I, you know, and this is not a knock on Mercer, but it's nationwide. Like, adjuncts don't get paid a lot of money. I don't do it for the money. I teach every spring. I teach Georgia appellate practice. And the reason I do it is because I'm a big believer in educating and mentoring the next generation of lawyers. And so the way we do it, I do it on Mondays. It's a two-hour class in the spring from 12 to 2:10. And I lecture for the first part, and I go from the very beginning of trial and preserving errors all the way through special issues and rules for appellate courts. And what I'm trying to – so I lecture for an hour, and then the second half I bring in speakers. Like today, you may have seen him walking in the parking lot, former Chief Justice Harold Melton. I've had – this year I've already had former Chief Justice David Namias has spoken to the class. Justice Keith
Blackwell, former Justice Keith Blackwell, has been co-teaching with me a little bit. I've had federal judges, Judge Lisa Branch, Judge Britt Grant, Judge Don Willett from the Fifth Circuit has come and been a guest speaker. Fingers crossed, I can't name any names, but I'm working actually on getting a justice of the Supreme Court of the United States to come and zoom into one of our classes. So I try to do something unique for Mercer students since I live in Macon, even though I didn't go here. I'm a big believer in the education that Mercer provides, and I'm trying to contribute to my local community and the students who live here and are part of this school community to make them more effective lawyers and practitioners when they get out into the real world.
I love the love of the game people.
Yeah.
I don't care what it is. Like, if you find somebody who is living their life's calling, it feels different.
Yeah.
And I think that is super... It's one rare, but I think that it is super unique because I think the average person gets married, has a family, punches the clock, you know, and to a certain degree, I know we all have to sit there and bite the bullet every once in a while and do some things we're not overly passionate about, but it's cool to see people outside of your high-profile elected offices just love what they do.
And I do, and I hope it shows because I hope at the end of my career, it'd be nice if they said he was a great judge and a great mentor. But I hope what they'll say is that I was a joyful public servant because I love my job. I feel like I wake up every day and I can't believe I'm now in year 14 and I'm just as excited to go to work and to do the job I do every day as I was when I was sworn in by Governor Perdue those many years ago in November 2010.
Judge Stephen Dillard, thank you for your time today.
My pleasure.
In today's fast-paced world, your business deserves banking solutions that are as dynamic and cost-effective as you are. Solutions like free business checking from LGE Community Credit Union, free online and mobile banking, no minimum balance required, plus no maintenance fees and dividends on your balance. At LGE, we're a smarter way to bank. See what's possible for your business at lgeccu.org. No monthly maintenance fees. Other service fees such as NSF, overdraft, wire, and stop payment fees still apply. Not all businesses will qualify. Membership eligibility and base savings account that keeps $5 minimum balance required.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
This is the Ben Burnett Show on Extra 106.3.
Welcome back to the Ben Burnett Show on Extra 106.3, Atlanta's only conservative talk station. Monday through Friday, you can listen to Tug, Rhino, and Los on the Morning Extra. Noon to 3, you can catch Clay Travis and Buck Sexton, highest-rated conservative talk show in all of America. And 3 until 6, you can listen to Kimmer, Pete, and Flounder all the way home. The final thing I want to get to is that I want you to know that nobody... and I mean nobody in public service is any smarter than you are. I don't care how you feel. I don't care what your intellect is. They are all capable of making really lousy decisions professionally, personally. It doesn't matter what your stripes are. It doesn't matter who your team is, Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, none of them. You guys all walk around with as much sense as anybody in elected office. A lot of them are extremely careful because when you talk to the media, the only thing that you can stand to do as a conservative is lose. But it's not exclusive to conservatives. Last week, Nathan Wade, the special prosecutor in the Funny Willis Fulton County versus Donald Trump in the fake electors, quote unquote, fake electors case, got thrown off the case in Fulton County. You know, there's a lot of reasons why the judge, Judge McAfee, guy that Governor Kemp put on the bench, he's running for re-election right now, said this dude is not allowed to be a part of this trial. Funny Willis can. She's allowed to proceed with the case. I have to imagine that that is going to be a bloodbath on her life. And I have to imagine that even if the judge says that you should strike certain things from the record, if you're one of the 12, I mean, you can't unhear absolutely everything. That trial, regardless of how you feel about the 16, 17, however many some odd quote-unquote fake electors there were, has been nothing short of a grease fire. And I say that with a tremendous amount of respect for the judicial system as a whole. But I am starting to get to a place where I feel like the DA's office or your Department of Justice is just another political tool. I think Judge McAfee is really trying to do his level best. I think he's trying to make good decisions. And at the same time, I think that's probably hard when you have to run for re-election. He can sit there in an interview and tell me, and I'm sure I'll have him at some point before the fall during election season. It's a challenging life. And on some level, the guy's got to figure out how to get reelected. And then on the other hand, you know, you've taken an oath as a lawyer. And for those of you who don't know, there is a higher standard to your life that you have as a lawyer than you do as a walking around human being. That doesn't mean that it always exists. I'm just telling you that they actually take an oath to uphold a certain very high moral and ethical code. But as I started the segment, nobody in this game, nobody in the business has any more walking around sense than you are. And I think sometimes it gets the best of absolutely everybody in public service. A lot of these people don't come from competitive backgrounds. A lot of them didn't have any notoriety as kids or college students. And the only thing, the first time they ever see any limelight is in their 30s or 40s, and they've wanted it forever. They were the last person picked to play in the basketball game. They weren't the person that you went after on field day. I mean, there's a ton of them. And most of them aren't anything to write home about. Look, I like Mitch McConnell as a conservative. I know plenty of you don't. Tell me what Mitch McConnell did with his life from a competitive standpoint before he entered politics. The answer to that question is almost nothing. He had polio, and we're not going to fault him for that. He created a sort of disability. I'm not going to sit there and make disparaging comments. That could be anybody. There's a ton of people in my listening audience who deal with certain things. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for all of you who overcome adversity. But Mitch McConnell was a motivated politician if there ever was one. In the same way, it is clear at this point that Funny Willis is just somebody who's on the other team. Not a ton of notoriety. She was prosecuting cases. I'm sure she was working really, really hard with Paul Howard trying to lock people up. And then she decided it was her time to take the swing because the man was very unpopular with Republicans. And she got elected. Shortly after she got elected, she started making really poor decisions. Plenty of those in the DA's office. Plenty of those with the people that she brought on board. So she hires her lover, Nathan Wade. And Nathan Wade ultimately, as we talked about, got thrown off the case. And then he decides he's going to go on the media tour. There are a couple of things that I want you guys to understand. If you have testified in a case as to whether or not you were allowed to serve, that is under oath. It's actually under oath if they swear you in at any point. You're going to be accountable to what you've said. But if you are sworn under oath and then you go do the media tour trying to litigate or cover up or make excuses for however you lived, it has no choice. There is nothing positive that can ultimately happen on your life. If I am Nathan Wade, look, I'm going to give the guy free advice even though he sits on the other team. He was a divorce attorney and a traffic lawyer getting people out of DUIs and parking tickets. I can argue that he had no business being on the case, and clearly Judge McAfee thought the same thing. But once you have sat there and testified to the whereabouts and the actions of a personal relationship that you had with somebody that you shouldn't have had on the taxpayer-funded dime, you're only going to stand to cause yourself a tremendous amount of hell. And that's what I would tell him. Look, I understand if you want the notoriety to go on Meet the Press or Chris Cuomo or whatever the show is at night, and you want to create the identity for yourself. Nathan Wade, the whole world right now thinks you are a total joke. And the greatest advantage that you could give to absolutely everybody, mostly yourself, is to go home and hide. You've gone through a divorce. You're going to go on the media tour. You're probably going to open yourself to plenty of opportunity to make conflicting statements with whatever lies you sat there and told or didn't tell in your testimony. And then you're going to wind up potentially being criminally liable if you try to backpedal or soft stance some part of what you said or what you did. If you are explaining in this world, you are losing. You make statements and you let those statements speak for themselves. I think Nathan Wade is a complete idiot. I recognize that the man has gone to law school, but anybody who is willing to sit there with a high school education, really a college education, but with a high school aptitude, and you're willing to really put your best foot forward to learn how to write, learn how to read, that's what being a lawyer is. It's a lot of it. It's a lot of research. It's things like that. But that dude is not prepared for Meet the Press and Fox News and CNN, and he's going to bring a tremendous amount of hell on his life. Nathan Wade, the greatest thing that you can do is not cover up anything that you may have done. The greatest advantage that you can ultimately give to your life is to go away, resume your practice, rebuild everything, make a lot of money, let people forget who you are, and move on to the next chapter of your life. Because I promise you, everybody has a next chapter of their life until the game is over, until your time on earth is done. My name is Ben Burnett. I appreciate all of you joining me today. You can find me on social media, Twitter or X, at Ben Burnett. You can find me on Instagram at The Ben Burnett Show, and you can find me on Facebook. I'm the guy with the blue check mark. I don't know if there's any other Ben Burnetts with blue check marks. I don't say that to brag. I say that so you can find me. Follow me if you want one of my trucker hats made by Peach State Pride with the logo. We're mailing them out. They're going to be free. They're in a couple of weeks. This is Extra 106.3, Atlanta's only conservative talk station. I am so grateful for each of you for spending time with me this weekend. Go watch some basketball. Make it a good one.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right? Which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart. There needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com, and then call us for a free in-home consultation.